Okay. So what I do for a living is I'm, as Rabbi Kelman mentioned before, I'm a professor of computer science at Bar-Ilan University. Those of you who are not professors may not be aware of the fact that the main thing that professors do is not teach, but rather direct graduate students and write papers and go to conferences to talk about their original research. My research, one of the areas of my research is authorship attribution, which is one comes up all the time against problems of documents that are anonymous and we want to know who wrote them, or documents that have been attributed to some particular author, but we may have some reason to believe that, in fact, the author to which these documents are attributed is not the actual author, and we want to know who in fact, is the real author. Okay, and the way we do these things nowadays is using automated computational methods. Okay, it's not, I mean, there are still old-fashioned experts who testify in court and actually read things and come up with some kind of insight about, you know, some particular word that an author used that may be a dead giveaway. If anybody saw the movie Hayarat Shulayim, that's one of the central themes in it, okay? But in fact, the really serious work in this area now is done completely computationally. It's not done by some guy, you know, with a magnifying glass pouring over the thing to find some exotic word or letter. Now, the way we do this, okay, let's just imagine. I'll give you an example of the kind of thing. Before I give you an example, let me tell you who uses this kind of thing, okay? Well, imagine that you are the FBI or the police or Canadian equivalent of the CIA or the Mossad, whatever they call it. So, what's it called? Oh, okay, good to know. You have a document that you know was written by some dangerous person that you want to get your hands on, but of course you don't know who actually wrote the document. You know that whoever wrote it must be dangerous, right? Say it's a threat or something like that. You have a database of writings of thousands and thousands of suspects, and the actual author might be in that database, might not be, okay? So you can do all kinds of analyses in which you study the statistical properties of the text. Well, with what frequency does this author use the word the? Okay, to give you, now that sounds like it's well, that's not too useful, right? I mean, why? Well, it turns out, for example, if the author uses the word the less than 4% of the words in the text, it's probably somebody whose native language is Russian, okay? So just to give you an example of something that, you know, one can do with this sort of thing. But if instead of only looking at the frequency of the word the, you actually looked at the frequency of the word the and the frequency of the word and for and if and of and nevertheless and albeit, okay, and all kinds of other weird stuff, you could actually build up some kind of an authorial fingerprint, okay? You can get some sense of an author's style. If you want to get fancy, you could even look at the frequency with which an author uses parts of speech and combinations of parts of speech, and you can get into all kinds of other exotica, okay? And if you do this, you can very often determine who was the actual author of a particular document, if that author is in some known database. Another kind of problem that's a lot easier is a problem in which you have a small set of suspects. Okay, so let me give you an example from a Jewish context. Most of the research I do is not in a Jewish context, but since these, you know, rabbinic writings interest me, I often try to apply the methods that I develop in authorship attribution. I try to apply them to various rabbinic texts that are the authorship of which might be controversial. Okay, now, a typical example is the following. Two of the great Rishonim, of the great scholars of the 13th century, are the Rashba and the Ritva. Okay, they were close colleagues. The Ritva was a student of the Rashba. They were both students of the Ramban. And their styles are very similar. They both wrote many responsa with regard to halacha questions that they were asked. And there are a number of examples in which the Beit Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, quotes a responsum that is generally regarded to belong to one of them, say the Rashba, and he'll say, and as the Ritva writes, and so forth. So suddenly we have some doubt is cast upon who's the actual author of this document. Is it the Rashba or the Ritva? And we can use methods such as I'm describing to you to determine which is the correct author. Okay, if we analyze statistically, okay, computationally, statistically, we analyze the writings of the Rashba and the Ritva, we discover that their styles are very different in subtle ways that even an expert would not notice. For example, the Rashba has a tendency to talk to the reader. He'll say, Sha'alta, Katavta, Amarta. He'll speak in second person. He'll say, as you wrote, as you asked, as you said. The Ritva rarely speaks to the questioner in second person. Another thing is that the Ritva has a tendency to talk in a very definitive style. So he might say something like Barur, okay? It's clear that this is the case. Okay, the Rashba has a tendency to use those kinds of words much less frequently than the Ritva does. Okay, and on the basis of all kinds of subtle statistical clues like this, we can look at a particular disputed responsum and determine which one of them is the actual author. Okay, now we've got the idea. I'm not going to get into the mathematics of it, but I'll only tell you that very briefly, the way we do this is we first take any given text, whether it's a training text, we know who the author is and we want to learn the style of that author by analyzing the training text, or if it's an anonymous text that we wish to attribute, the first thing we do is convert the text into some mathematical form. Okay, it's a numerical vector for those who are mathematicians here that represents all of the statistical properties of that text. Okay, that's the first step. Having done that, we look for a formula. Given we have training texts, say we have 1,000 documents written by the Rashba, 1,000 written by the Ritva, and each one of them is essentially just a sequence of numbers representing the statistical properties. We now look for a formula that essentially, if you think of the numerical representation of documents of the Rashba as being points in space, okay, so imagine this is the Rashba, and then there are points in space that represent the Ritva, we're looking for a line that somehow divides the points of the Rashba from the points of the Ritva, okay? So for mathematicians, all this stuff should be perfectly transparent. For everybody else, it should be perfectly opaque. That's all the math there's going to be, okay? If anybody's interested in this, I'm happy to talk about it afterwards, okay? We're past that. Now, let me talk about two particular controversies with regard to authorship to which I apply these methods to resolve them, okay? The first problem both of these problems go back a little bit over, or approximately 100 years. The first problem is the problem of known as Gnizat Cherson, okay? The trove of Cherson, okay? It's neither a trove nor is it from Cherson, but the story is as follows. At the time of the Russian Revolution, okay, so it's almost 100 years now, at the time of the Russian Revolution, a Jewish antiquities collector claimed to have found a collection of letters that were signed by the Baal Shem Tov. Some of them were by the Baal Shem Tov. Some of them were by students of the Baal Shem Tov. A fair number of them, about half in fact, were signed by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Balatanya Reb Shneur Zalman Miladi. Okay? Now, These letters, if they were authentic, would be absolutely priceless. Okay, we only have one brief letter from the Baal Shem Tov. This would have given us a whole collection of them. Okay, now the letters, I have to tell you, were, if you look at the substance of the letters, and we're actually going to see one in a moment. Okay, there is no deep theological speculation in these letters. There's no fantastically important historical information in these letters. Okay, it kind of reminds me in a way of, if anybody read Woody Allen's story, you know, Metternich's laundry list. Okay, the letters are entirely banal in all respects, but it doesn't matter because the letters were written. I guess it's the best we could do. I don't know. They were. Can anybody see this, by the way, or is it just like little spots on a wall? Okay, all right. It doesn't matter. We'll do what we can. What I really want to do is shrink the rulers and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm talking. Okay. So the point is, now we want to know whether the letters are authentic. Now, what happened at the time was, well, of course, everybody wanted to know if these letters were authentic, right? That was the big question. So the question was brought to two of the great leaders of the time, okay? One of them was the Gerer Rebbe, okay, the Imre Emes, okay? The letters were brought to the Imre Emes, and he showed them to Reb Meir Dan Plunsky, okay, known as the Kli Chemda, okay, who was a great scholar. Thank you very much. Okay, known as the Kli Chemda, and both of them came to the same conclusion. These letters are fake, okay? The letters are fake. Now, the story didn't end there, however, because the letters were also brought to the Rayatz, the Lubavitcher Rebbe at the time. This is the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the Lubavitchers had a particular interest in this trove of letters because many of them were written by the Baal HaTanya, or at least alleged to have been written by the Baal HaTanya. Now, the Rayatz, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, looked at them and he said, he didn't just say that they were authentic. He said, Kodesh Kodashim, Holy of Holies. Okay, so now we've got a controversy on our hands, right? The Gerer Rebbe says they're fake. The Lubavitcher Rebbe says that they're Kodesh Kodashim, Holy of Holies. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do we do now? Okay, so, yeah. So, this controversy continued for generations, okay? And, of course, when they asked the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe whether these letters are authentic or not, well, his father-in-law had already established that they were Kodesh Kodashim, so he said they were Kodesh Kodashim, even though his librarian, Rav Chaim Lieberman, who was his expert on Lubavitch writings, knew they were fake, okay? Or he believed they were fake, I should say. I don't want to give away the ending. So he knew that, well, he suspected they were fake, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe had to go with what his father-in-law had already said. Okay. Now, at some point, I should tell you, somebody analyzed the paper and the ink that was used in these letters. And the paper was found to have been paper that was only available in the early 20th century and not at the time when these letters were alleged to have been written in the early 19th century. Okay? Same with the ink. So they asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe what he was going to do about this inconvenient fact. And he said, well, the letters were simply copied over onto something else. There was already this very valuable trove, and they had to be copied over, so they were copied over. That's not a proof. Okay. So, two of the people who were very involved in this, in studying it, are two great scholars of rabbinic literature. David Zvi Hillman, who passed away about 2 years ago, And Yibara L'chaim Arukim, Professor Shlomo Zalman Havlin, who retired from Bar Ilan a couple of years ago. And they both happen to be grandchildren of well-known Lubavitcher Rosh Yeshiva. But both of them are also very, very, are and were, respectively, very serious scholars. And they both believed that all of these letters were fake. Okay? And they asked me to use my statistical methods in order to test whether the letters are fake or real. So I did. Now the question is, how does one go about testing this? This is this particular problem, okay? You need to find a methodology. We need to set it up the way the kind of problems we know how to solve are set up. And we did the setup in the following way, okay? We meaning me. I divide up, I create three collections of letters, okay? The first collection consists of those letters that are attributed to the Baal HaTanya in this collection, in Gnizat Cherson, okay? That's the first thing. The second thing we look at are letters that are attributed to other writers in Gnizat Cherson, so the Baal Shem Tov and various others who are signed on letters in this collection. And the third set consists of letters that are written by the Baal HaTanya and are authenticated. Okay, we have many authentic letters of the Baal HaTanya. Okay, now, what do we do? We do the following. There are really two hypotheses here, and we need to decide which one is right. There's no third possibility. The two possibilities are that all of the letters in Gnizat Cherson were written by a single forger. Okay? That's possibility number one. Possibility number two is that all of the letters in Gnizat Cherson were written by the person who signed on them, which means in the case of the letters of the Baal HaTanya, those signed by the Baal HaTanya in Gnizat Cherson, there are exactly two possibilities. Either those letters were all written by the Baal HaTanya, or they were all written by the forger. Okay, now, we know how to set up the experiment. Let me take, as my first training set, all the letters written by other people in Gnizat Cherson. My second training set consists of all the letters written by the Baal HaTanya for sure. Okay, the ones that are authenticated, we know were written by the Baal HaTanya. And we're going to learn a model that distinguishes between these two sets. Okay, I'm going to find that magic formula using the statistical methods that we use, a magic formula that tells me whether a given text is written by the Baal HaTanya or by whoever wrote those other letters in Gnizat Cherson. Okay? Now, I want to know whether the model that I learned to distinguish them works. Okay? How can I do that? How can I know that the formula that I found works? I'll tell you the trick. Okay? I have a little trick called cross-validation. What I do is, I'm not going to get into all the technical details, let's take a few of the letters out of these two collections, right? A few of them from Gnizat Cherson, but not Baal HaTanya, a few of them that are authentic Baal HaTanya, and we're going to put them in our pockets, okay? Let's stick them in our pockets, all right? Forget about them for now. We're going to use our method for finding a magic formula on all the other documents, okay? And we're going to find the formula. We found the formula. What are we going to do now? We're going to take these documents out of our pockets. We know who wrote each one of them. And we're going to say, okay, formula, you tell me who is the author of this document, this document, this document that I just took out of my pocket. Okay? We know the right answer. We can check what our computer tells us is the right answer. And we can see whether we got it right or we didn't get it right. Okay? So we did all this. And we discovered that, in fact, we can perfectly distinguish between letters in Gnizat Cherson, not by the Baal HaTanya, and letters written by the Baal HaTanya. The fact that we're able to do this only means that we can rely on our methods. It doesn't tell us anything about whether these documents are forged or not. It doesn't tell us anything about it. Okay? We're not trying for that at this stage. Okay, now we've got the magic model. What are we going to do now? Now that we know that we're able to distinguish the style of Gnizat Cherson, not Balatanya, from authentic Balatanya, there's only one step left. Okay, and what is that step? We're going to take our third collection, letters attributed to the Balatanya, in Gnizat Cherson, and we're going to take them one at a time and put them into our method, into our algorithm, in the magic formula, as it were, and we're going to say, okay, is this letter more like the style of the Balatanya, or is it more like the style of the writer of the other letters in Gnizat Cherson? If these letters are authentic and really written by the Balatanya, we expect to see that all of them, or almost all of them, there's always glitches, almost all of them, should be attributed to the Baal HaTanya, right? We did this. What happens? I gave it away already. The answer is that every single letter, without exception, is much more similar to the style of whoever wrote Gnizat Cherson than they are to the style of the Baal HaTanya. Okay? So at this point, I'm quite convinced that these letters are fakes. But you can't appreciate the extent to which it's clear that these letters are fakes until you look at the letters themselves and see why we think they're more similar to the style of the author of Gnizat Cherson than the Baal HaTanya. So let's take a look at a couple of examples over here, okay? So here we have a letter that's attributed to the Baal HaTanya in Gnizat Cherson, okay? Now, you see these, it says, El Kvod Kodesh HaKadoshim. And here it says, V'chu, 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 and so on, and so on, and so on, okay? And, okay, once again here, he says, he's referring to somebody, right? He says, L'chvod kodsho, right? And then he says here, HaKadosh Yichye Netzach, may he live eternally, okay? All of these things are fanciful blessings and titles that we add to people. He says, Baruch Hashem ani osek bo, okay? Just take note of all of these things. They're going to be important momentarily. Now, let's go down and have a look at an authentic letter of the Baal HaTanya. Okay? The Baal HaTanya in this letter also refers to somebody, Adoneinu, Harav, HaKadosh, HaKayin, HaGadol, Sheyichya. Okay? What we should note in this letter, however, is despite the fact that he's referring to this person, he does not refer to him as Kvod Kacho. Okay? He does not afterwards say Yichya Netzach. He just says Sheyichya. Okay? He does not use the phrase Baruch Hashem. Okay? And he does not use the phrase V'chule. Let me move a little bit to the right here. I think there's a little bit cut off because I want you to see this. Note this phrase. Hamechakim Lishuas Hashem Mamish Chule, without that vav. Okay? Now, if you go through all of the letters of the Baal HaTanya, you will find that he always says chule without the vav. He doesn't say v'chule, okay? He just doesn't do that, okay? It's the kind of thing a computer picks up, okay? It's a more antiquated way of saying it. That was his style, okay? He also never says Yichya Netzach. He never says Kvod Kacho, okay? This is just an example. One example doesn't prove anything, but I looked at them all, okay? The Baal HaTanya doesn't use those phrases. Those phrases, however, are typical of somebody else. They're typical of the author of Gnizat Cherson. Here in a letter attributed to the Baal HaTanya, just shift a little bit to the right. To the Baal Shem Tov. You will see that here too he uses Kvod Kodesh. He says V'chule with a Vav, Kvod Kacho, Yichya Netzach, etc. All of these phrases, Yichya Netzach, Kvod Kacho, are typical of all the letters in Gnizat Cherson. They are completely atypical of this writing style of the Baal HaTanya. Okay? So we can conclude fairly confidently that all of these letters are in fact fake. The Gerer is one. Okay. Now, let's go now to another famous historical problem. Okay? Also given to me by Professor Hovland, as it happens. All right. The problem here is even more bizarre than the previous one. Okay? The Ben Ish Chai was the chief rabbi, the Gadol Hador, among the Jews of Iraq at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. His 100th Yahrzeit was a few years ago. Okay, he wrote 33 books, right? His real name was Yosef Chaim. He wrote 33 books, including a book of tshuvot, responsa, known as Rav Pa'alim. It's a very, very important book. He was the most important Sephardi posek of his era. He's the bet noir of Rav Ovadia Yosef's tshuvas. Okay, Rav Ovadia, Zichrono Livracha, was trying to rescue Sephardi Psak from what he thought was the influence, the overly Kabbalistic influence of the Ben Ish Chai. And the interesting story, however, about the Ben Ish Chai, which I'm going to discuss today, is the following. The Ben Ish Chai at some point found a book of responsa in the Gniza in the Shul in Baghdad. Okay, and he decided to publish this book of responsa, and he called it Torah Lishma. Okay, now, first thing we need to know is that the very first tshuva in Torah Lishma tells us a little bit about the book. Amar Hakatan Yechezkel Kachli Bezrat Ha'Yatzuri V'Goali Hinei Zehecheli Mishnat Hei Taf Mem Bet Lichtov Seder Shelot Utshuvot Mima Shechanini El Shochein Ervot. Lovely. Okay, so we know the name of the author of the work. The author is one Yechezkel Kachli. We also know what period he lived in. He lived in Hei Taf Mem Bet, which is 1682. He began writing this book of Tshuvot in 1682. The Ben Ish Chai was born in the middle of the 19th century. Okay, so this is a good 150 years before his birth. Okay, there are about 500 responsa in this book, Torah Lishma. There's one problem, okay? If he has 500 responsa in the book, that means 500 times at least somebody asked him a shaila, right? How many rabbanim have 500 shilas worth writing a tshuva on? Not too many. You have to be a very, very serious posek in order to have 500 substantial shilas that are worth writing a tshuva on, right? Okay, so who's Yechezkel Kachli? He had to have been a very prominent rav, right? Nobody ever heard of him, okay? Nobody has ever heard of any Yechezkel Kachli. He isn't quoted by anybody ever. Okay? Where did he live? Whose Rav was he? Right? It's all very mysterious. There's no reference to any such person in the 17th century. Okay. That makes it odd in itself. Okay? Now, let's note that he has a very distinctive sign-off, okay? Every time he signs a tshuva, you can look at the 500 tshuvas of the Torah Lishma, he ends, Veheyeze Shalom, etc., etc. Okay, great. Let us now look at a tshuva written by the Ben Ish Chai, okay, in his work Rav Pa'alim. First of all, he quotes Rabbi Yechezkel Kachli, okay? The chain, right? He says, et cetera, et cetera. He writes a tshuva, as you can see if you look at the details here, that it's a blend of Kabbalah and Halacha. And then he says, V'chein ra'isi l'mahari kachli yecheskel kachli zal b'sefer tor l'shmak, Saviad. Okay. Interesting. He quotes the quotes Rabbi Yecheskel Kachli as a kind of a ton of the Messiah, right? And here's, not only I think this, but even the great Yecheskel Kachli himself thinks this. Okay? And one other thing we ought to note, the Ben Ish Chai also has a very distinctive sign-off. Ya'ir einenu b'or torato. That is how he signs off on almost all of his trumas. Okay. So far, so good. Now, since nobody ever heard of Rabbi Yecheskel Kachli, some people began to suspect, well, what would you suspect? Suddenly this mysterious book of Tshuvos is discovered by the Ben Ish Chai in some gniza, okay? And nobody ever heard of the person who wrote it. And there's something suspiciously similar about some of the tshuvas here to some of the tshuvas that appear in Rav Pa'alim, okay? So, what you begin to think is that maybe the Ben Ish Chai actually wrote these tshuvas himself, right? But for some reason, and I won't even speculate on what the reason is, he decided that he didn't want to put his name on these tshuvas. Maybe it was a youthful work. Who knows? Okay. I'm not going there. Okay. Now, let's look at a tshuva of the Ateret Paz. The Ateret Paz is a contemporary posek in Yerushalayim. His name is Pinchas Zevichi, Ateret Paz, the Rosh Tevot. He's not well known yet, but he's a very serious up-and-coming young posek. And he summarizes for us here the controversy among the great Sephardi poskim of the 20th century with regard to the authorship of Torah Lishma. And what he says here is that Mahari Sofer Shlita, this is a grandson of the Kaf HaChaim, Svirle ki chibur zeh shel shut Torah Lishma harei hu l'hagon Rav Yosef Chaim Zal Gufei. Okay, so he tells us that the well-known Rosh Yeshiva Rav Sofer believes that the work was actually written by the Ben Ish Chai himself. Okay? But then he says, Mori Verabi Maran Malka Shlita, of Malka is one of the great Sephardi Rosh Yeshiva, Nira Daharav Mechaber et Shutor Lishma, Eino Hagon Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zatzal. Okay? So Rav Malka says it's not written by the Ben Ish Chai himself, whereas Rav Sofer says it was written by the Ben Ish Chai. And he concludes this little discussion, Rav Pinchas Zevichi, by saying at the end, Yesh makom litzadeid lechan ulechan. He says there are arguments in both directions. Okay, it's a tough call. Okay, so I got this problem to analyze. And the question is, how would we go about analyzing this? Okay, not a simple thing. One thing that we might suggest, okay, that doesn't work is the following. Let's take the tshuvas in Torah Lishma and the tshuvas of Rav Pa'alim and think of them as two classes, okay? We'll also take some tshuvas from each of them at random and put them in our pocket, okay, like we did before. Now, we're going to learn a magic formula that distinguishes Rav Pa'alim from Torah Lishma. Okay? And first we're going to check if that works, and what we're going to do, basically, is check whether the magic formula works on the stuff in our pockets. If we discover that it does work, so what does that tell us? If we can distinguish between Rav Pa'alim and Torah Lishma well enough that given some other tshuva that wasn't used in the training session, we can say, oh, that one's Rav Pa'alim, that one's Torah Lishma. What could we conclude from that? That the styles of Rav Pa'alim and Torah Lishma are sufficiently distinct that we can tell them apart, and therefore they must have been written by two different authors, right? Do you think we could conclude that? Actually, not really. First of all, let's do it, okay, before we start to speculate. So we did it, okay? It turns out that you can distinguish the tshuvas of Rav Poland from Torah Lishma on an anonymous tshuva, right, that we secretly know the answer to, but we don't tell the computer, we can distinguish them with 100% accuracy. We never fail. They are clearly different styles in some ways. But what are the differences? What gives it away? Well, I'll tell you what gives it away. What gives it away is, remember I pointed out to you that they each have distinct sign-offs? Okay? Ya'ir einenu ba'or torato is a perfect marker for the writing of Rav Pa'olam, of the Ben Ish Chai. Okay? Ve'heyezer shalom is a marker of the writing of Torah Lishma, whoever the author is. Okay? So, just those linguistic features by themselves are enough to tell us, okay, whether a document, a held out document, was written by this one or that one. So if we contemplate that, that means nothing, right? Because supposing you were the Ben Ish Chai, and supposing you had in fact written the collection Torah Lishma, and you didn't want anybody to know that you wrote it, well, what would you do? You would put in a little joker like that and say, okay, yeah, I usually write, you know, Ve'heyezer Shalom. Okay, it's too easy, right? I mean, anybody can do that, right? But what the Ben Ish Chai can't do is control the number of times he uses the phrase v'chule, going back to an old favorite of ours, okay, or the number of times he uses the word ki, or haya, or anything like that, right? Maybe one or two of them he could control, but he can't control hundreds of them. The subtle frequency with which he uses, right, these little things, very difficult to do. Well, how are we going to overcome this problem then? If, right, the method that I described to you now does distinguish between Rav Poland and Torah Lishma, but we're not convinced that it works. Okay? It may be, by the way, that in addition to the difference, these subtle differences that I point out to you, right, there could be other differences that are there because of thematic differences between the works, right? The subject matter may change a little bit. There might be differences of purpose, different intended audience, and of course, the obvious, right, ruses, because he doesn't want us to know he wrote them. One has to take all this into account. In order to take this into account, I invented a new method that's now the standard method in authorship attribution. The Ben Ish Chai is a star in the world of authorship attribution in the world. The method is called unmasking. And the way unmasking works is, we say, I'm going to do the experiment I just described to you now. We're going to see if we can distinguish Rav Poland from Torah Lishma based on the features. But we're going to do it in an iterative way. Okay? And we're just going to repeat the experiment with subtle changes each time. And the subtle changes are as follows. I'm first going to see if I can tell the difference between Rav Poland and Torah Lishma exactly as I described to you. And then I'm going to check with what accuracy I could do that. Okay, so the answer is I can do it with 100% accuracy. Now I'm going to look at the main features that we're giving away to show because I'm afraid that maybe those are deliberate, okay? Or are there for some other tangential reason that doesn't tell us about authorship. And what we're going to do is we're going to take those words. What do you think we're going to do? We're going to throw them out of the experiment. And we're going to run the experiment again and see if we can still tell the difference, okay? And then we're going to do it. And we're going to check, and we'll get some number, 98% accuracy. Okay, it's got to go down because I'm giving away valuable information. I'm going to do it again and throw out the next few features that are really important. I'm going to do this again and again and again. Okay, now, what do we suspect might happen if we do this technique? What we suspect might happen if we do this is that if the two books are written by a single author, we imagine that the differences between them are superficial, right? There's the sign-off, there's maybe a few other things. But once we've thrown out enough of those superficial features, we call them masks, once we've done that, we expect that we won't be able to distinguish between them anymore, and our accuracy, when we check ourselves, will go down to something like 50%, which is random, right? Whereas if there were two distinct authors, We imagine that there are lots of differences between them, and we could keep throwing out features and we would still be able to distinguish them with rather high accuracy. Now, in order to check whether this hypothesis is correct or incorrect, I did it on hundreds of books where I know who the authors are, okay? So I take different works by Nathaniel Hawthorne, okay? The Scarlet Letter and The House of Seven Gables, and I check what happens, and sure enough, since they're the same author, initially I can tell them apart easily because, you know why I can tell them apart? Because of the word she, which appears lots of times in House of Seven Gables because of all the female characters, okay, but infrequently in Scarlet Letter because Hester Prynne is the only female character in the work, okay? So I get rid of the word she, and I do the experiment again, okay? And my accuracy goes down, and by the time I've gone through 5 or 6 loops, I can't tell the books apart, okay? I went through, I got the basic stuff out of the way, now I can't tell the books apart. However, if I compare the Scarlet Letter to, say, Moby Dick, okay, which in fact I did, right, and I do this exact experiment, I could throw out as many features as you want, and I can still tell the difference between Scarlet Letter and Moby Dick, because there are lots and lots and lots of differences between them, okay? And I'm not even looking at thematic things. The word whale doesn't even appear in, right, among the things I check. Okay? I'm only looking at stylistic features like frequencies of what we call function words, right? Words that are not related to content. Okay? Now, so I know this method works. And now that I know that this method works, I'm going to take it and apply it to Rav Pa'olam and Torah Lishma. Okay? And just to make sure that there's no anomaly going on here having to do with historical stuff. I tested in English, and this is in Hebrew, and it's, you know, etc. I also did this experiment with 6 other authors, okay, who came from the same general region, okay, from the area of Iraq, okay, who wrote Tshuvas in the same period. Of course, the period is undetermined, but sometime between 1682 and 1907, okay, I take a whole bunch of this. I'm going to use these just for backup, just for comparison. And what happens? When I compare Torah Lishma to Zivchei Tzedek, for example, just some imposter that I took just for comparison purposes, well, it turns out that I can throw out as many features as I want, and I can still tell the difference between Torah Lishma and Zivchei Tzedek. There are lots of differences, okay? When I do the same thing to all my other imposters, exactly the same thing. It doesn't matter how many features I throw out, how many iterations, I can still tell them apart. When I compare Rav Pa'olam to Torah Lishma, well, after I got rid of the Heyeza Shalom and Yair Einenu Ba'or Torah To, and a few other minor things, I can't tell them apart at all, okay? They're absolutely identical, okay? The frequency with which, for example, he uses the word v'chule, okay, is identical to 3 decimal places, okay? There is no question whatsoever that Torah Lishma was written by the Ben Ish Chai. Now, you're probably wondering, why would he do such a thing? It sounds really awful, right? You can get fired from the RCA for that kind of stuff. Right? Why would the Ben Ish Chai do this? Okay? Now, let me just say, just in case you're thinking, it can't be, he wouldn't do such a thing, let me tell you that he gave us the broadest hint you could possibly imagine that in fact he was the author. Okay? What's the name of the author that this is attributed to? Yechezkel Kachli. Okay, what was the Ben Ish Chai's name? Yosef Chaim. The gematria of Yosef is identical to the gematria of Yechezkel. The gematria of Chaim is identical to the gematria of Kachli. Okay? So if you're the kind of person who thinks in gematrias, this is practically like signing your name. Okay? Okay? So the Ben Ish Chai in fact told us that he wrote this work. Okay? Why he did it, let me just tell you, in case you're thinking that it's unethical or something like that, the standards The standards with regard to plagiarism and pseudo epigrapha in general in literature and historically are not the same as they are nowadays. Okay, let me give you another example that might shock you. Okay, if you look at the parish of Rabbeinu Hananel, okay, on various mesechtes of Shas, okay, it's just Rabbeinu Hananel. However, if you compare it to the parish of Rav Hai Gon, for example, on various Prakram of Masechta Shabbos, you will discover that about 90% of what we call Rabbeinu Hananel's parish is taken verbatim from Rav Hai Gon. Okay? And the reason for this is that in those days, they regarded texts of this sort as being Wikipedia. Okay? The idea was that you had a text that would just continue on, and people would continue working on that text and put in their own insertions, additions, emendations, etc. It wasn't regarded as plagiarism, because it was exactly what Wikipedia is. Okay, that's how the text went. Now, when the Ben Ish Chai did this, of course, this is 1,000 years after Rabbeinu Hananel, I don't believe that he was actually trying to fool anybody. Okay. He wasn't trying to fool anybody. He wasn't trying to, for example, when he quotes from Yechezkel Kachli as, you know, even he says so, he's not trying to give his view greater credibility by saying that so-and-so already said it. The Ben Ish Chai, when he wrote Rav Pa'olim, was the greatest posek in the world. He didn't need some totally anonymous posek to back him up. That didn't add anything to his credibility, okay? So, for whatever reasons he did it, and I don't want to speculate, he was a Kabbalist, so I can only guess, as some of his students now say, he did it for various Kabbalistic reasons. He was jailed, he thought that this would die, who knows? Okay, I'm not buying that either, but in any event, he didn't do it in order to give himself credibility. That is surely not the case. Why he did it beats me. Okay, if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Yeah. The Torah Lishma,
yes.
I would argue it has more value. We know that it was written by the Ben Ish Chai. The fraud is only in the first line. After that, it's Shuvus of the Ben Ish Chai. I think its value increased. Yeah? How would that solve the problem if he used another name, though? Could be. Okay, it could be. As long as, as I said, I really don't have a good theory, so any theory you have is at least as good as anything I've got. Well, I'll take, could be. Okay, thank you very much.